newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore.
The Media Project is underway, an opportunity for a half hour of commentary and analysis and even sometimes some insight into the media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, the editor of the Times Union, and Dr. Alan Shartok is here.
Yo, Rexy. King of the Media Project, Rex.
King of, yeah, Rex. Actually, you know, I sing with this ensemble, Albany Pro Musica, and we just performed with the Philadelphia Orchestra, and we were taught that this great movement of Mozart, Rex Tremendae Majestatis, we needed at least three R's on the front of it. Rex. So I want you all, can you practice this? Rex Tremendae Majestatis.
How wonderful that is, Rex. You were singing with the second best orchestra in the United States.
I'm sure that your friends in the BSO. What about the ASO, Albany, Alan?
You know. It's a wonderful thing, there as you always say. It's that's a wonderful thing.
There we go. Rosemary Armeo is here, investigative journalist and now former, I guess you'd be a retired professor from the University of Albany.
Exactly. Well, I'm going to be an adjunct professor.
Are you?
Soon. Yeah, next semester.
Okay, well, that's a good thing. All right. And Judy Patrick, former editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady and vice president of the New York Press Association.
I am happy to be here, as usual.
Well, happy. Let's be happy.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we have to get right to this issue, ignorant and insensitive.
That's you, Rex.
That's us.
I read about that.
The governor says that the Times Union was ignorant and insensitive. He is actually specifically speaking of a column written by our managing editor, Casey Seiler, who I should point out is on vacation and unable to defend himself personally. But Casey wrote a humorous column about this video that went viral involving the governor's brother, Chris Cuomo, a CNN. Interesting, by the way, this story identifies him as a CNN personality. Is that the right word for
him? No, I call him a CNN journalist.
He's more like a personality because he gives opinion and is very biased. He's more like a Sean Hannity than a Wolf Blitzer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
I think so.
You mean Rosemary Armeo? You mean to tell me that a person who writes editorials for the New York Times is not a journalist? I hope the New York Times is listening right now.
No, that's not what I mean at all. No, you're twisting my words, Alan.
Yeah, I'm just hoping we're not insulting Chris Cuomo by calling him a personality because we're going to get some blowback.
It will be called ignorant and insensitive.
The governor will be after us.
It was, as you know, the video showed Chris Cuomo cursing and threatening violence against a man who described him as Fredo. Fredo Corleone, of course, is the, let's say, a weak-minded son from The Godfather. And Chris Cuomo took offense at that. Casey Seiler wrote a humorous column about that, and the governor took offense at that. So everybody's offended, right?
The governor didn't think it was humorous. Now, let me just set it up a little bit. I'm sitting there, and I'm having a good time with this whole Fredo thing. I think it's sort of interesting. And so I say something to the governor. I was waiting to say something.
This is live on air, right?
Yeah, live on air. And he goes BS. I mean, he really goes for it. And he accuses Seiler of being insensitive, of Rex and the rest of the crew at the Times Union shouldn't have put it up, and that it's something that he's had to live with all of his life, anti-Italian slurs. Who's making that slur?
Rosemary is. The Italian-American in the group is making that noise.
Well, there you go. So anyway, it was an unbelievable outburst. It was quite something.
It's a little hard since we don't have the column right here in front of us, but Rosemary, since you are Italian-American, do you think that it was offensive?
I read it, and I laughed. I read it aloud to my mother, who is also Italian-American. And the round table that morning, I said, wow, did you read Casey Seiler's article? It's pretty funny. And then Alan disagreed. He also does not like it. We haven't gotten to that yet. And then, of course, the governor comes on and went crazy over it. I thought it was actually a pretty inventive little insult. It turns out Rush Limbaugh invented that he's been calling Chris Cuomo Fredo for quite some time. So the guy just stole it. I did not know that.
I didn't know that either, yeah.
And, of course, Casey's point was, why is it an insult to call him Fredo when Fredo was the only member of the family who did not want to buy into the family business of murder murder and death and destruction, of course, and corruption, of course. There was a little problem of betraying your brother. I get that.
Ridiculous. And not only that, but he had it all wrong because Fredo, you may remember, was put in charge of prostitution for the group.
But he liked women. He was always, you know, his weakness was always kind of an endearing quality.
In Casey's own words, poor, sweet, non-homicidal
there you
Fredo.
Go. There you go. That's it.
So poor, sweet, non-homicidal
so,
Fredo.
I mean, we got a real lesson in insults and being insensitive from our president this week talking about Jews. And that was offensive. Casey
yes,
didn't come anywhere near that. It was plainly, you know, making light of a situation that was hardly as dire as the president going after Jewish voters.
So I'm sure that Rex will give you a pat on the head for defending.
We did not rehearse this ahead of time. I genuinely thought it was pretty funny.
I can say to you, I don't agree with you, but forget it. I do think that you may raise an interesting point, which I'd like to take up for a second, and that is that you're Italian, therefore you can speak with some expertise on
As
Italian
you do about
insults.
Israel and Palestine, yes.
Right, exactly. So therefore, anybody who's Jewish can speak a cathedra, as we say, on that subject, and anybody who's Italian can. Wrong.
Hey, content aside, I think this is a classic example of everybody supports the First Amendment until they disagree with what you said. And you know what? The Times Union has the right to publish offensive and insensitive material. In fact, I imagine every day you publish something that offends someone somewhere.
Yay.
And that's the nature of journalism.
Go, Jenny Patrick.
Seems to be. Our coverage of a tennis match in yesterday's paper seemed to offend a lot of people. You know, the sports writer wrote that the tennis players seemed to be less than fully engaged in the thing, and everybody got all upset that we were offending the women tennis players at the Aurora Games, you know.
Wow.
At two, Judy, I mean, honestly, every time the press does something that's not healthy, somebody yells at them, and then somebody says, well, you're creating chaos with the First Amendment. Come on now.
She's right. She's right. And
no, she's wrong.
It's far more offensive for news outlets to be bland and to work at not offending everyone. Then they don't say anything. What's the point of them?
That's not the point. The point is every time the press does something that somebody else finds reprehensible, they defend themselves by saying whoever is accusing them is in violation of the First Amendment. That's nonsense.
That's not what Judy said.
No, the governor has a right to criticize the Times Union. The Times Union has a right to publish it. But was he suggesting that the Times Union should not have published the article?
Yes, I think he was. He was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Rex should have known better.
He specifically says, yes, I should have known better. He says, you know, Casey, he's from Kentucky, so he doesn't. He was really, really offensive.
I think he's been here quite a while, though.
He's been here quite a while. He's lived in the Northeast for 25 years. But,
is that a slur in Kentucky?
Well, it was. You see, and I'm from South Dakota. I mean, I'm surprised you didn't say...
Oh, yeah, talk about slurrable.
You dumb boys from out west. He did not say that. And I had a thoughtful conversation with the governor after he had gone on the air with Alan. It turns out he had been trying to reach me earlier in the day before he was on the air, and I hadn't had a chance to respond to the phone call. So
that's
Alan,
fantastic.
He
wow,
didn't know
things
that.
More important than talking to the governor.
Whoa, well, let's hear about this. This is news. I didn't know about that. So you had a conversation with the governor before the program, before he exploded?
No, he tried to reach me before the program, and then I didn't get to it until afterwards. I didn't get back to him. So he had already sort of vented his spleen on the air with you, and then I got back to him, and we talked for a while.
How'd that go?
Well,
did it go well?
It was an off-the-record conversation. Did it go well?
Honest exchange of views.
It was an frank exchange of views, yes. It was an off-the-record conversation, so I don't feel comfortable talking about it very much, except to say that we had the conversation, and it was an interesting thing. You know, one of the issues that this raises, Alan, is an interesting one in the context of NPR. The woman who now runs NPR is Nancy Barnes, a former editor of the Houston Chronicle and won a Pulitzer Prize when she led the Minneapolis Star Tribune, a really strong newswoman. And she has pointed out the perils of live interviewing. And she is asking NPR to do less of it because, you know, live interviewing is interesting because you have someone right there in person. But the downside is you can't give the other side of the story. You can't do the kind of deeper look, take a breath, get the other view that you can do when you record somebody and then do a full package. So your interview with the governor was interesting, but of course you didn't have the opportunity to get the other side of the story to give your listeners access themselves to Casey's column or to hear what Casey might have to say about this.
Yeah, but isn't that what we're doing right now, Rex?
We're giving the other side right now. Yep.
Respectfully, Rex, you could not be more wrong.
Oh, come on.
The whole beauty of on-air live is that people are saying, whoa, look at that. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. I agree with Alan. Alan, we're in agreement on this. Yes. Rachel Maddow last night in the middle of a show, Jay Inslee comes on and goes, okay, I'm dropping out. Unplanned, unrehearsed, no one knew about it. It was great.
That's cool.
It was great.
It's
just
a case, and sometimes, and that is Nancy Barnes's point with NPR, that sometimes it's really great. But if you do it to the exclusion so that you don't have a chance to bring in nuance, you don't have a chance to bring in the other side, you're only getting that breaking news. That's cool, but then you do need to come back pretty quickly and give them the deeper story.
Sure. Right.
What a bunch of nonsense.
Wait, the governor he hijacked your airwaves, and you were actually trying to get him to talk about other things, but he kept on coming back to the Chris Cuomo topic.
He did, and I got to confess, I loved every moment of it. And I am sure that
that's why radio is different from the papers, isn't it, though, Rex?
Yeah.
It's a little less careful and judicious.
I loved every
Alan, defend yourself here.
My mouth and judicious, Judy says. Did you hear that?
Yes. You guys have always been snot noses. I know that. And you always
name calling. God.
You always think that whatever it is that you do doesn't stink. So I don't agree. I think if this lady from NPR is correct, if you are right in quoting her that way, I think that's a disgrace. I do. can send her that.
It's not all absolute. She's just saying that she thinks that NPR has done a little bit too much of it in recent years. And so she was asking the newsroom to cut back some. So
that's disgraceful. And I'm going to let her know.
Okay.
Some of those NPR live interviews, they ramble on. And again, the person being interviewed hijacks the space, the time. And I know in radio, time is essential.
Yeah.
But isn't that the fault of the interviewer?
You yourself have said, how much can you do? The governor, you lose control. You can do the very best you can as an interviewer, but the person talks and says what they want to say.
On media training where executives and powerful people are taught how to take over interviews, how to not answer questions that you don't want to answer, how to make points you want to make. So, it's something that journalists should be aware of. I don't think the answer is not having live interviews, but...
Yeah. Well, all I know is that I noticed with this governor, I've been doing a lot of interviews with him. Remember, he didn't talk to me for 8 years. He was angry at me. So I do know that in these interviews, he is much more responsive when he's going on. And I say, wait a second now, governor. And he will stop. Maybe he's taking journalism training of some kind. Don't you see?
Don't you see? You could be right, Alan. Or this is one of my favorite, actually. I have this wonderful elderly friend who has a great response when somebody says something that's basically bosh. He says, well, there's something in what you say. It's a great response. There's something in what you say.
Snotty is snotty. It doesn't change.
All right. If you're just joining us and you haven't abandoned us yet, this is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, Judy Patrick, and I'm Rex Smith, and we are happy to be with you. Great story coming out of Oregon, absolutely. Oregon officials requested a criminal investigation into newspaper reporters because the reporters were calling them after hours and because they were sending them emails over the weekend. So a state representative who is also a county official said he needed to have the county attorney look into it to see whether the reporters' persistent attempts to contact them was a violation of the law.
Ridiculous. This happened to us once working in Virginia where we had a shooting in a school in Norfolk, Virginia. It happened on a Friday afternoon, so of course we were calling the superintendent late at night and over the weekend, and he hung up on us angrily saying, don't bother me until, school hours.
Oh.
So, of course, he was crucified in the newspaper. He just wrote a list of all of his time, where he had spent his time. You can't get away with that. These public service jobs means you're serving the public, and there are no set hours for that. Had the reporters written a story without trying to get a response, can you imagine the criticism then?
Exactly. Sure. Exactly.
It's unbelievable that...
Some public officials understand this. When I was a young reporter at Newsday, we had very late deadlines. And the Nassau County executive, this is a guy who was running a big local government, would expect his phone calls late at night from Newsday. And you know how reporters will say to the night desk, can I get a good night? Meaning, are you through with me? Is my story through? The county executive would say to the night editor, can I get a good night now? Can I go to bed? But I remember calling him at 1 a.m. to get a comment. You hate to bother somebody at that point, but it's better to do that than to not have an opportunity for their view in a story.
But I can tell you, Rex, that Mario Cuomo, Andrew's papa, thought nothing of calling people at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
12 o'clock in the morning.
So,
and I was the recipient of one of those phone calls in which he was giving me the business. I mean, he was really angry. And I'm saying, but. And finally I said, Governor, can I say something? And he said, you've said enough. I hadn't said a word. So,
Yeah, I should note that in this case, the public official said that he had been subjected to endless phone calls, hostile emails at all hours of the day, and unwelcome office visits. Apparently, the reporter sent two emails to this guy during business hours seeking comment. And then on Saturday, before the story got published, he felt that it was his duty to give it one last try, and he made a call. I mean, three times? I mean, this is outrageous, ridiculous, but it's something that a lot of reporters and editors deal with. I can tell you, every reporter has heard every editor say, try it again. Try him again.
Yeah.
Try him again,
yeah.
Because you want to make every effort to reach the person and give them an opportunity to talk.
Early on as a reporter, one of my favorite complaints about me to an editor was, she pumped me for information.
Imagine that.
I know. I do have to say, though, that while this was a ridiculous charge, it seems to have been handled really quickly by the sheriff involved, who said, you know, forget about it. There's nothing going on here.
Right.
So that at least is encouraging.
And he's a Republican, I believe, and
yes,
a conservative, the sheriff, in a conservative area, and he still had the guts to say this is nothing.
Yeah, of course.
But it is a matter of degree. Would a reporter get in trouble if they called someone every 5 minutes or once every hour? I mean, I can remember calling people once every, at least three or four times a day. Is that harassment? Is it harassment to knock on the door on a Saturday afternoon? Usually not. But if you're there, you know, every hour on the hour, it's, again, a matter of degree.
There is a whole art to getting people to talk to you.
Yeah.
All that guy had to do is say, I'm not going to talk to you until Monday, and there wouldn't have been any more phone calls. He opted not to speak at all. We went so far once as to say, you know, we've been calling you, and we didn't get an answer. We're worried. We're going to call your mother and make sure, see if she's heard from you. And we got a call back right away.
You know,
was that harassment? It's right on the edge of it.
We did have a situation like that where a young reporter who was determined to get a comment from a local business person ended up reaching out to what we thought was his Florida home and ended up being his mother's residence.
Yeah.
And so the business person was very upset that we had reached out to his mom.
The mother.
But it was an investigative piece that cast the businessman in a bad light. We made every effort, but he threatened similarly to sue us.
I want to make clear
privacy.
That reporters do not think that they have a right to answers. There's nothing that makes you are not required to talk to a reporter, but reporters are required to give you the opportunity to talk. And so they will be very enthusiastic to try to get that.
Sure. And then there's one other thing that we should say here. Not all reporters are the same. I mean, you know, we're talking as if all journalists have a code of ethics and that they follow it. Listen, Rex and I know one guy around here. He used to call up, and my wife, Roselle, would hand me the phone with two fingers on the top and hold her nose at the same time because people are different.
Yeah, you're actually right. People handle it very differently.
I don't know what we're supposed to take from that. That doesn't sound like really good journalism to me.
Well, but there are bad journalists, is my point. There are offensive journalists. There are people who, at least two Law and Orders were about journalists who got killed because everybody hated them.
At least.
I didn't know that was a nonfiction show.
That's a metric that we follow.
But you know, offensive or not, they are the only profession protected by the First Amendment, Alan, to bring that up again.
There you go again.
Yep.
There you go again. As soon as you get a nasty reporter doing something, oh boy, you know, that's offensive to the First Amendment. That's ridiculous. I mean, the First Amendment.
It's really not.
Well, you mean anything goes because it's covered by the First Amendment. Any
misbehavior. A lot of things go. Not everything. It's not like the Second Amendment. There are some limits on the First, but.
Yes, almost anything goes. Yeah,
you can make mistakes. That's Supreme
that's
Court
allowed.
Rulings. You can be a little overeager because
you can lie.
You cannot lie.
Wait a second.
There's libel laws against that.
If you defame someone with something that is not true.
Well, wait a second now. You'll all remember New York Times versus Sullivan, right? You'll remember that the issue at hand there was that the police chief had used the police dogs, and he hadn't.
First of all, that wasn't even a news story.
That was an
advertisement.
Well, so what? The point really is the same, which is you say you cannot. Well, we need to know.
It wasn't a lie, Alan. It was an error, and it was a small error. And it wasn't that the dogs weren't used. It was who authorized the use of the dogs.
It was a minor point. Well, it may have been minor, but if you were the police chief, it wouldn't have been minor to you.
Right. So you bring a suit, and it goes to the Supreme Court, and you get smacked down. Good
exactly
for journalists.
Right.
Yeah.
This show should be called Anything Is Okay If a Journalist Does It Show.
It's a long name. I don't know.
It's too long. Too long. Anything is okay. Yeah, let's see if we can make an acronym out of it. Here's a letter from a listener that we want to deal with, and you're welcome to write your notes. This is someone from Chatham who's upset about a headline, a newscast where you reported, it's a headline on a story, but it was actually a story that was written and read over the air here. A report on a truck driver who was arrested for planning a shooting. And this is a former truck driver who takes exception to singling out the occupation. The FBI says a truck driver who threatened to shoot up a church in Memphis said he was haunted by spiritual snakes and spiders that people put in bed, and he was arrested.
So the issue was that they had called him a truck driver, and
right,
it was an insult to all truck drivers.
Why single out this one person to mention this one occupation? There are literally millions of truck drivers who have no intention of ever wreaking the havoc one among them planned, yet your unfair reporting has tarnished each and every one of us.
You know, Rexy, one of the things I love about you is when you talk about man bites dog, man bites dog story. Well, you know, this is a story about a truck driver, one truck driver out of all the truck drivers who did something bad. I mean, I don't see what's so bad about saying he was a truck driver, giving his profession.
It's one of the identifiers that we use for other people. What do you do and how old are you? And people find giving ages and naming an occupation offensive. There is no other good way to do it. I've heard the same complaint with identifying Muslim kills 20.
Right.
Why are we picking out his religion? He was just a sick individual.
Sunni student. You
Sunni
know, we've
student,
had that.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
We
it's
get
just,
complaints.
But when you're talking to people, what's the first thing you ask? What do you do? That's how
so
we
what
identify
you,
people. We
so
should do it
should
just
you,
the way we are and say to people like our letter writer, we're sorry, we just disagree that we were impugning all truck drivers. It was this one crazy guy we were impugning.
Right, it's the
so
first sentence.
What should you have said is my question. In other words, should you have said man or woman?
Well, why? There's lots of men who didn't do it either.
Right.
So there's no identifier you can use.
I'm not arguing for it. I'm arguing on your side.
You are. A person did this.
Right. And the letter writer also maintained that when you dealt with other mass shootings, the news media does not identify the occupation, which is not true.
They always
It's one
do.
Of the first things yeah. we try to do. Often, the people are unemployed, but finding the occupation is the first thing, is one of the first things
and
we do.
And age is next.
And even actually saying that could be a headline, jobless man threatened, because that may be a relevant factor about the person. It doesn't
right.
impugn
right.
the integrity of every person who doesn't have work, really.
It's related to the issue that we hear a lot of now, that we should not name the perpetrators in mass shootings and other horrible crimes because that glorifies them. I don't see how giving them their name glorifies them, but
yeah,
that is a widely held belief.
A really generic lead would have said a person
right.
did this, and it gives practically no information. It gives no information really,
correct.
Except that it was a human being.
Now, if you were doing a story on kidney disease, and said, you know, truck drivers are more prone to kidney disease than others are, that would be accurate, wouldn't
it? I actually got criticized once again in Virginia when we wrote that. Teachers were laid off, and we named the teachers or the schools they came from or something, and we heard from the union that we were impugning teachers. How? They were laid off unfairly. Our article was in support of them, but just saying that and identifying them was seen as a bad thing.
Your views are welcome. Media@wamc.org is how you connect with us. If you want to send us something, we're always interested to hear your views. Let's talk a little bit about Fox News. Tucker Carlson, folks, is back from vacation. Isn't that amazing? There was actually what one commentator at least calls a cooling off period, which he had from vacation after he was defending white supremacy, downplaying white nationalist violence after the El Paso shooting. And what is most interesting, I think, is that according to this accounting, since December of 2018, that is just this year, Tucker Carlson's show has lost 70 paid advertisers. And one major Fox News advertiser, Long John Silver's, has removed its ads from the network entirely. I wonder if that's going to have an impact on Fox News.
Or on Long John Silver.
Right.
You were saying that cynically, right? I mean, you didn't sarcastically. I wonder if that's going to have an impact.
You know, in general, I tend to not like these advertiser boycott efforts. But in this case, it seems like the companies have found it distasteful to have their ads run next to really racist and misogynistic language. It seems like it's the companies are making this decision, and it's not an organized boycott.
I'm just afraid he's going to run for president next.
Tucker Carlson.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's horrible. A very interesting point.
Yeah.
He could be a candidate. His nightly paid ad load used to be 36 paid ads each night on his show, and now it's down to about 15 per episode. So he's lost more than half of his advertisers. So you have to wonder, wouldn't Fox News then begin to talk to, again, this is a commentator, not a straight news reporter. It's not as though advertisers are pulling their ads away from news, but it is that you know what you're going to get. If you are buying an ad on Tucker Carlson's show, you're going to get people who like that little mix of white supremacy, racism, and pugnacious right-wing ideology. So if that is the audience you're going for, I guess that's a place where you'd want to advertise, right?
And this is a business where advertising revenue matters incredibly more. The audience is what drives the revenue. And so it doesn't matter if he's got a big audience, if his revenue is nothing. And as Fox has shown in the past, they will probably shelve him as this trend continues.
I must say, as a consumer, I'm somewhat concerned. Somebody was talking to me about, let's just say, a pharmacy that I frequent, and they say, the guy gives big money to Trump. That's what am I supposed to do now, not shop at one of the largest pharmacies? If it's true, I don't even know if it's true.
Well, people do make consumer judgments, but they make judgments about the media outlets, too. And if our job is truth-telling, we have to be firm at that, even if it happens at some cost to the bottom line of our enterprise, right?
Have you ever had that at the Times Union?
Oh, my goodness. All the time. I hear from people who are upset with what we publish, and they say, I'm going to cancel my subscription, or I'm never going to read your newspaper again. And, of course, they're back a couple weeks later. They're still writing to me. Sometimes you want to say, go away! Sorry.
Yeah, I know. Truth be told, sometimes you just say, would you like me to transfer you to circulation?
Yeah.
And because people do call and threaten to cancel, but typically they don't cancel. You don't see a flush of cancellations when you run something controversial.
So that's all we have time for. That's actually good news, Judy, that we don't see a rash of cancellations. All right, The Media Project, Rosemary Armeo, Judy Patrick, Alan Shartok, and I'm Rex Smith. Thanks to David Castina, our producer, and to you all for listening to us on The Media Project.